Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
We've got several topics to talk about on this episode, including the baseball team's disappointing end to the season, the NBA rumors involving Juwan Howard, and plenty of football talk, including Jim Harbaugh and recruiting, coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be back talking with you. We've got a lot to cover today. Let's get right to it. Juwan Howard's name has come up for an NBA job because NBA jobs are opening up, and that's what's going to happen with Juwan Howard. I think wrote about this last year when it happened. You know, he was rumored as a candidate for openings that had come up. He waited all of 99 minutes to put out a statement, not refuting the reports. So the reports just said he was someone that teams would look at, but just saying, I'm not interested. I'm not seeking these opportunities, flattered by them. I'm sure it'll happen again, but you know, this is where I am. This is where I want to be. And that's that. He hasn't done that again this time, and that's fine. Doesn't really have to every single time, but there's a lot of reasons to believe he's not going anywhere right now, at least, or for the foreseeable future. He's only 2 years in to his tenure at Michigan. His son, Jace, is a rising sophomore on the team. His youngest son, Jet, is going into he's finishing up his junior year of high school. So he could potentially, be joining the team, this time next year. It was a 5-year deal initially, for whatever that's worth. And, he really loves it at Michigan and all that. So I don't know. What did you make of the reports this time around?
Well, I guess it's important to point out that the report did come from A.J. Wojnarowski of ESPN. He's probably the most credible NBA reporter out there. Now, I'm not saying that because I think it's a fact or anything the like, but it signals to me, as someone who covered the NBA for a couple of years and is familiar with how that works, it probably came from the report itself, and Juwan's name probably came from someone in the NBA side. So that signals to me, I think it was linked to the Portland Trailblazers opening. So that tells me there's someone in the Trailblazers organization that has interest in Juwan. Now, again, whether that is mutual, we don't really know at this point. And there maybe there is, but that doesn't necessarily automatically mean that Juwan's going to get the job either. So you pointed out that Juwan hasn't obviously acknowledged it publicly. He may not, but like you said, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, he's been successful at Michigan so far. He was a longtime assistant in the NBA, so he's a natural, I think, person to look to for this opening. But again, that doesn't necessarily equate to a departure either.
I mean, watching what Dame did a few times this postseason, I mean, it definitely looks like it's the most attractive NBA open position. But for all the reasons Andrew just said, I mean, it just seems highly unlikely at this point he would be looking to. I mean, that would be a big move too, to go all the way out there from Michigan. But I guess you never know if the right contract comes along, the right fit. But at this point, I think it's too early to really start speculating and believing and, hey, this is a real possibility. But I've learned in this business, anything can happen.
I would think for him to make the jump to the NBA, I don't think it's crazy to think he will do it at some point in his career. I mean, I think that's a goal of many basketball coaches, is to coach at the highest level. It would have to be the right opportunity, whether it's the town, the fit, the makeup of the roster, the situation the organization is in. I can remember when Stan Van Gundy got fired by the Pistons, he sat out the NBA season for, I think, a year or two, or he did, and I knew he was looking for the right fit. Job openings had come, he passed up a couple, and then he ended up in New Orleans. So you were looking for the right situation. What that is from Juwan's perspective, I don't think anyone knows beside him, but that'll be something to look for, if and when he ever makes that jump.
Yeah, the Boston Celtics and Orlando Magic are the other franchises currently looking for a head coach, and more could be as the summer rolls on. But Yeah, I mean, it's easy to see why there's interest in him, why he'd be on the short list, you know, for a lot of different teams, given that how highly respected he was in his 19 years in the league as a player, then six more as an assistant coach, and now what he's done at Michigan. I mean, the recruiting side probably doesn't really matter much in the NBA, although I still think it speaks to his personability and how, you know, people, you know, young players relate to him. I mean, college kids, yeah, are younger than your average pro, but still a young league. It's not a huge, you know, jump to the age of those players. But yeah, it's more his success. He had never been a head coach, and now you've seen him, you know, run a team, you know, be the guy making the decisions, you know, in game and things like that. And it's gone very well for Michigan, obviously, you know, last season winning the Big Ten and getting to the Elite Eight. So yeah, this is gonna continue to happen. You know, we saw certainly Michigan fans are familiar with it, you know, with Jim Harbaugh and the NFL. So this is just, you know, part of the deal with Juwan Howard. All right. Yeah. Let's like we said, we've got a lot to cover. So let's keep it moving. I mean, quickly hit on the baseball team. Their season came to an end in South Bend, Indiana. They just played, it was double elimination tournament. They played two games. They lost them both. You know, Friday night played UConn, lost 6-1. They got all two hits. In that game, one being a solo home run that tied the game at one, but that was it. And then they lose 8-2 to Central Michigan. They get 9 hits in that game, but still just the 2 runs. So that was that. I mean, you know, Ryan, you broke this down going into this thing. Like, there was potential there, but there was a lot of inconsistency throughout the season. There was a reason why Michigan kind of not snuck in, but was maybe one of the last teams, you know, selected for this field, and they end up, you know, the bats just kind of remained quiet. You know, they kind of limped into the postseason offensively, you know, and that's where they're at. And that can happen sometimes. And it made for a quick exit.
Yeah. Obviously you guys handled the games this weekend as I was on a little golf vacation off the grid, but yeah, I mean, they had games this year. They would put up like 17, 18 runs against Big Ten teams, but they struggled against Nebraska in the regular season finale. And yeah, it just looks like they just couldn't get the bats going. And it's unfortunate because I think this team did have had some talent and some depth. But again, it's all about getting hot at the right time. And unfortunately, Michigan did kind of limp into the postseason, losing 10 of their last 18 and could not rekindle that magic from 2019.
And then, you know, Aaron, you know, you and I watch, you know, covering the games, albeit remotely. I mean, that field, Eric Backage said it was the slowest turf, you know, he'd ever seen. One of the announcers was saying, I think he was citing maybe someone who had played on it, or maybe he had before. He likened it to playing on a beach, like the balls that would roll. I mean, they would just, and you'd just see them kicking up all this stuff. And it was funny. I mean, I don't think it didn't affect, you know, any of the games, certainly. Notre Dame, which, you know, ended up, you know, the host of this advancing in this pretty easily with a 10-0 win over Central Michigan, 26-3 win over UConn, and then a 14-2 win over Central Michigan to eliminate them in advance. Many of their balls went over the fence, so it didn't really matter what the field was like, but it was an interesting stadium.
Yeah, Notre Dame just dominated the regional. They were the better team, far and away, pitching, hitting. It was clear. You know, Michigan did, I thought, hit the ball a little bit better on Saturday. Like you said, they had 9 hits. They just couldn't string hits together and punch it in. I think they left the bases loaded in one inning. They left guys on base almost every inning. It was just they just couldn't get guys to home plate. And you know, mix that in with the lack of pitching, they struggled with the relievers. They weren't going to get very far. It was clear.
Yeah. That first game, they reached base more by hit by pitch than they did hits, 3-2. So that's never a good recipe. So that's it for their season. You know, I mean, overall it was, again, you wanted to build on that 2019 run, but again, that was 2 years ago. You know, there's some faces still on the team, but like, you know, it was just too bad. They didn't get, you know, a chance to try to do that. Of course, last year, you know, with COVID kind of wiping away much of the season, but so be it. That's where it stands. All right, let's move to some football talk. You guys have actually been able to get outside of the house, and you know, not, you're not covering games, but there's people to talk to. Real reporting being done. Feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I got a sunburn. It was kind of nice. It's hot out. It's the weather's nice again. Yeah, we talked about it briefly, I think, last week. Camp Circuit is back. Jim Harbaugh and his entire coaching staff, including all the new assistants, are on the trail. Last week, they started down in Georgia and Tennessee. Mike Hart and new quarterbacks coach Matt Weiss were in Eastern Michigan for the EMU camp last Tuesday. And then they all kind of descended upon Big Rapids Thursday afternoon. Ferris State hosted the big kind of state of Michigan camp. It's typically held at Grand Valley every year. They obviously didn't have it last year with COVID. But it's always a huge camp. Hundreds of coaches were there. Hundreds of student players were there. It was a big deal. I mean, every major school in the state of Michigan and several outside in the Midwest really were in attendance, including Harbaugh. All of his assistants were there. And we actually got to talk to Jim. It was the first time I think he had spoken to us as beat reporters since, gosh, the beginning of spring practice, I think. Didn't get a ton out of him because just by and large, we kind of know, you know, who's in the running to start. We have an idea of, you know, kind of depth chart with certain positions, I guess. Obviously, there's still some question marks at quarterback and some other spots, but there wasn't a lot of unknowns. But, you know, Jim was asked about the Bo Schembechler situation. You know, it's a topic that has obviously has come up given the recent WilmerHale report from the University of Michigan that basically said that there were several people in and around the athletic department that were aware of Dr. Robert Anderson, who was recently found to have, you know, allegedly sexually abused several hundred former student athletes at the University of Michigan. You know, Jim was asked about it. He was asked point blank by a TV reporter whether what he thinks Michigan should do moving forward with Bo Schembechler's legacy. And I'll read to you point blank what he said. He said, "I can tell you this, Bo Schembechler. There was nothing that I saw during the times I was a kid here. My dad was on the staff, or when I played here, he never sat on anything. He never procrastinated anything. I mean, he took care of it before the sun went down. That's the Bo Schembechler that I know. Nothing was ever swept under the rug or ignored. He addressed everything in a timely fashion. That's the Bo Schembechler that I know." Jim's taken some heat, I guess, on social media and in some circles the last, you know, few days for it. You know, I thought it was an interesting response. He could have just as easily no comment or said he didn't want to talk about it, but he made a stance to stand up for Bo, obviously, who he played for, who had his father on staff with him at Michigan. And you know, truth be told, I mean, Jim Harbaugh cites Bo Schembechler a lot. He's considered a mentor of his. You know, he's someone he looked up to. So it was an interesting comment, interesting situation. It's generated a lot of discussion here in the last week.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So what Harbaugh is saying, I mean, he's saying, okay, from what I saw, and he's implying that, you know, other things, you know, things that came up, you know, Bo Schembechler dealt with them. And he didn't sweep them under the rug. He didn't sit on it. He witnessed firsthand, you know, a man of integrity, I guess. And that's fine, but then he's what he's doing then is he's discrediting this report. I mean, he's saying he's essentially either he didn't read it or he doesn't believe it's accurate, because the report is pretty clear that in this case, Bo Schembechler did sit on it. Sweeping it under the rug might be going a little bit too far, but he didn't do what he should have done. So it might not be the Bo Schembechler you knew, but you knew Bo Schembechler, and this is what he did. I mean, this is what we know happened. So those two things are kind of at odds. I mean, these things can happen. You see, you know, someone does something wrong and, you know, they interview the neighbors. Oh, he seemed like such a nice guy or whatever. Okay, but there might be things you didn't know. I mean, in this case, you know, Jim Harbaugh may just didn't know about all this, and that's fine. I'm not saying he's guilty just by association, but yeah, to take that stance, it's not surprising he'd be criticized for it.
No, it's important to point out, you know, for context here, this report that came out, I think it was May last month, it was released. It was commissioned, paid for by the University of Michigan. It basically came out and endorsed what Michigan had already said. They basically, you know, admitted guilt that not enough was done with regard to Robert Anderson, who has obviously since passed away. Bo Schembechler has obviously since passed away. You know, you're right. It's at odds with what the report said. I don't know what else to say beyond that. I wish we could have a more in-depth conversation with Jim about this. I don't know if he would be willing to do it, but it's one of those things where it's, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Sure. Yeah, it could be a, you know, a topic for a full podcast down the road for us, and maybe bringing on a guest to talk about, because you've got Bo Schembechler and you've got Fielding Yost as well, you know, kind of now in the news with a you know, report, you know, on his legacy as well. And these are you know, complicated topics, and yeah, it made more so by the fact that, you know, these individuals are no longer around. And I don't want to say necessarily to defend themselves, but I guess, yeah, provide further, you know, information on what's going on. Yeah. So it will be interesting to see, you know, what happens with, you know, the names of buildings and statues and just generally how these figures, who are, you know, revered and viewed as, you know, legends in Michigan football history, are, you know, viewed going forward.
I'm glad you brought up the statue thing, because that's, I think, the next thing here. I think, and that's where I think the question was coming from. You know, we've seen a report now that Michigan is reviewing Fielding H. Yost's name on the ice hockey arena. I think the next thing to fall here would be reviewing Bo Schembechler's name on Schembechler Hall. And there's obviously the statue outside of it. There's no indication at this point that Michigan is doing that, but I can tell you, in talking to folks in and around the athletic department, they're not exactly ruling it out either. So we'll see going forward. It'll probably be something, like you said, this is a delicate conversation. It's very tricky here, but don't be surprised, you know, down the line at some point that this is going to come up again.
All right. Yeah. So we had that, which, you know, Harbaugh did talk about, and we talked about the camps itself. And then we've got some recruiting news as well to get to on the football side. Ryan, you can probably speak to that first.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a huge month, not only for Michigan, but for every college program getting to host recruits on campus for official visits. And it's been a little bit light for Michigan so far. Their big weekend for Victor's weekends here in a couple weekends, but they had a few visitors this weekend. Four-star linebacker Micah Pollard, who's actually Braylon Edwards' nephew, California edge rusher Trevante Henry, and Florida three-star defensive lineman Hayden Schwartz all were here this weekend. Didn't end up in any commitments, but obviously just getting to talk with the coaches, interact with coaches, and see the campus and all the facilities should bode well here. I mean, obviously it's early in the month, so a lot of these prospects are visiting other schools as well. So I would expect that maybe a flurry of commitments here at the end of the month, once these prospects get to check out and compare and contrast schools and coaches and all this. And yeah, like we said, camps help as well. I mean, coaches are getting out there evaluating guys in person. And I mean, it's just interesting to see how much like a coach will pull a guy aside and talk to him, see coaches talking to parents on the sidelines while these camps are going on. So a lot to catch up on for these coaches to do. And we'll see. And another big thing Michigan hosted last week was Detroit Day. I mean, they've made an emphasis to recruit their backyard, and they're trying to do that by hosting this Detroit Day, where they had about 50 prospects from Metro Detroit come in and kind of take photos with the Michigan branding on it and get to interact with the coaches. And there were some huge names there. I mean, Will Johnson, the five-star cornerback commit in this cycle, 2023 five-star quarterback Dante Moore from Detroit King. I mean, he's going to be a monster target for them moving forward. Almost, it could be even bigger than JJ McCarthy. So his recruitment will be something to watch. 2023 West Bloomfield four-star offensive lineman Amir Herring, who I will actually be talking to here later today to get a few more details on Detroit Day, and a few other guys in the 2022 class too, and Dylan Tatum and Deion Walker, two in-state guys that are high on Michigan's board. So again, it hasn't resulted in any pledges yet. It's been a couple months since Michigan's added anyone in the 2022 class, but I would definitely expect some dominoes to fall here this month. Unfortunately for Michigan, they lost out on one of their top wide receiver commits yesterday, on a top 100 receiver, Caleb Brown, going to Ohio State to give the Buckeyes now the number one class in the nation. I mean, they just continue to dominate on the recruiting trail. Yeah, they have, since Brian Hartline took over, there is a wide receivers coach there. They've landed 10 receivers, and 9 of them are ranked top 100 prospects nationally. I mean, that's just insane hit ratio. So Michigan will need to kind of look elsewhere at that position and kind of beef up their receiving corps too, to try and contend with Ohio State.
you can make the argument that Ohio State didn't even need Caleb Brown in their class. I mean, they've already got a couple pair of top 100 receivers. They're loaded at the position. In a way, this is almost them like flexing their muscles. I mean, they've got the number one recruiting class in the 2022 class. They continue to dominate the Big Ten. At this point, I mean, Ohio State is, I don't know, I don't see anyone running past them anytime soon. They continue to pile up talent. Michigan's got to, like, they got to create some momentum here. You talked about them recruiting their backyard. They're starting to make more of an emphasis, obviously. As I mentioned earlier, they had a couple guys at the EMU camp last week that normally they probably would have not shown up to. They had a couple guys Monday night at Wayne State University. So they're trying, they're making more of an effort. Whether it results in more production, we'll see. But they've got a new staff. I mean, this class, I'm curious to see where this class ends up. It is a transitory period, so they may take some time. But things are going to need to pick up here soon if Michigan really wants to flip this year or try to flip it.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point where it's like not too early in the class anymore. Typically, this is the time where our recruiting classes begin to fill up. And I mean, Michigan doesn't have a quarterback still. They only have 7 pledges overall. So obviously a lot of these kids are trying to wait it out so they can see places. But I mean, now Ohio State already has 13 guys in their class. So yeah, it's going to be a pivotal month for Michigan here moving forward, and they need to start hitting some home runs on some of these visits and at these camps to kind of get some of these guys in the fold here.
Their class ranking currently sits 21st nationally, 4th in the Big Ten. Obviously, it'll probably improve here if they can land some of these big targets. But yeah, they've got some work to do. It's important to point out, too, when they changed kind of recruiting staffs a few years back, when they brought in Matt Dudek, they really struggled. Their class finished, I think, 15 or in the 15 to 20 range. It wasn't like a top 10 or top 15 that they were used to. So it wouldn't be a crazy thing to think that they don't finish top 10 here this year, but they've got to, like, as I've been pounding, saying week after week, they've got to build an identity. They've got to find a plan and kind of map a future here from a recruiting perspective to try and, build with this new staff. Because look, when we've said this before, when you change assistants and change staff and change philosophies as they are on the defensive side of the ball, you're going to see a lot of kids either A, leave the program, which we've seen, and B, recruits start to, start to think, well, is this system, is this scheme right for me? And it changes minds, and they've got to, in a way, recruit to a new type of player. So that's going to take some time, but again, they don't have a ton of it, as we all know. I mean, it's they got to start winning here, whether it's this year or next. Time is certainly not on their side at this point.
Right. Yeah, I mean, coming off a 2-4 season, it's always tough to kind of sell the recruits about a winning culture. I mean, obviously it was a pandemic-shortened season, but having a solid bounce-back year in 2021 here should definitely help on the recruiting trail, but only time will tell.
That's a good point. I'm sure they can't wait to actually get back out on the field and try to put last year behind them. All right, well, that wraps up this episode of Wolverine Confidential. If you liked it, please rate it, review it on iTunes. That'll help it bump up the charts and allow more people to find it and access it. But we'll be back either later this week or next week. Thank you. Bye.